Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This episode of the Cult Popture Podcast was brought to you by our Patreon. If you want to tell us which films we should watch, listen to up to 2 extra exclusive podcasts a month, or give us something to discuss in our new post-credit scenes at the end of each episode, then please consider joining the cult and donating at www.patreon.com/cultpopture.
Hey, hey. Welcome to a belated episode of the Cult Popture Podcast. I'm Richard.
I hope is like hot off the presses. You know, this is coming to you mere hours after it was recorded. Even 1 hour, depending how long this episode is. If it's 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Do that in an hour.
Yeah. So it's actually not late. If anything, it's early because of how quick the turnaround is. It's late compared to our usual schedule.
And I'm back. I'm back, everybody. I was gone. And now I'm back. I'm replacing Jess, the only woman.
Just because it's Oscar season, you know, we want to like...
this all-male reboot of last week's podcast. And Richard, I edited last week's podcast despite only appearing in it in flashbacks. and I really like how you explained my absence in a tantalizing, mysterious way. You were like, AJ's not here and... It doesn't really matter why he's not here. And I want to keep the mystery alive this week by not explaining where I was.
Good.
But rest assured, everybody, it was mysterious.
Nice.
And if you knew where I was, you'd be like, oh man, I'm so glad I knew where he was.
All right. So we're also joined by Aaron.
Hello.
Aaron's back. In the present day timeline of last week's podcast. The Oscars have happened. Historical win. For quite a few reasons. So, Parasite obviously took out Best Picture, the first foreign film to do so, the first South Korean film to be represented at the Oscars. I say first foreign film, but first film not in the English language, I guess, because technically The Artist is a French production, although it has one line of dialogue and it isn't English. But Parasite's generally considered the first foreign language. It's the first foreign language film to win Best Picture, and boy howdy, is it a good movie, and did it deserve its win? And it also took home the most awards of the night with 4.
Nice.
Which is bloody good on it. Good on you, Director Bong.
Bloody good on you.
And
it's also historical in being the first film, the first Best Picture winner to actually be like real great. No, I'm kidding. There are others, but it rarely feels like films as good as Parasite win Best Picture.
Yeah,
like this is probably my favorite Best Picture winner.
Not since Crash have we seen such quality.
I saw a tweet that was like, wow, what a great night. They even went down and hunted down Crash's Best Picture Oscar and took it back.
We all had different experiences with the Oscars this year as well. I wasn't able to watch it live. I caught the best picture winner, but that's about all I saw. Aaron, did you watch it?
No, I didn't. I was busy working on a TV show in the office and didn't happen to see any of the Oscars.
It's interesting that you're working on a TV show and no one like kept updated.
Yeah, no, it was weird. There was no like big kind of atmosphere around it. People were just sort of quietly typing in the office, except for one of the like producer's assistants who was like, oh, look, Taika won an Oscar. Cool. And then she watched his acceptance speech, and that was about it.
Yeah, well, I took the day off work to watch the Oscars, and I just watched them by myself at home while a chili slowly cooked away at my slow cooker, which and I had it not long ago. It was very nice. I didn't have all of it. I didn't eat an entire slow cooker's worth of chili, but it was very good. Aaron tried some.
My God,
it was good, actually. It was vegetarian as well, guys.
Yeah. And so, I took the Oscar the day off work because I don't know if you guys have, or if anyone listening is super passionate about something and then someone tries to talk to them about it and it's like, you don't know as much as I do. And that's not me being like an elitist prick, knowing slightly more than everyone I work with. I work with people who know I like the Oscars and want to, and are forced to, because it's a news organization, they're forced to pretend that they care about entertainment, but they don't. And it's really frustrating to me. So I just
calling
cannot
out,
be around.
Called
it.
Out.
And, but apparently, yeah, there was big cheers in the newsroom when Taika won, which he of course won the award for best adapted screenplay. But yeah, since he's a Kiwi, and they're like, yes, now we have a reason to care about the Oscars. But anyway, for those of us who you know, actually care about this, here's this list of winners, and we'll kind of go through. I mean, yeah, we don't really have a game plan for this episode. It's kind of just a post Oscars chat. So, best VFX went to 1917. So, yeah, that was a pretty good one. And I remember when that one was announced, I was like, 1917 just won Best Picture. And boy, was I wrong.
Wow.
And boy, were my arms tired.
You declared... you declared... I just declared 1917 Best Picture, and boy, are my arms tired. you declared last week, Richard, yeah. That Avengers Endgame was a shoo-in for VFX.
Yeah, I thought so, and that's why I thought 1917 coming in with the upset. Yeah, and then I was like, it's all the cards are in its favor. It's going to win.
What does VFX cover, like, specifically as a category?
You look at the other nominees, Avengers Endgame, Irishman, Lion King, Star Wars. It's computer-generated effects. Right. Although Tron, the movie, was disqualified for being nominated for Best Visual Effects because the Academy thought it was cheating to use a computer.
Right.
To generate effects.
What the heck?
And boy, are their arms tired. Yeah, so I mean, I guess, yeah, it had good VFX. Often the best VFX are invisible. I'd love it if we didn't... by 10, indivisible by themselves. I would love it if we didn't spend as much time on the kind of, let's, you know... The awards that...
The shithole
awards. Let's breeze through the technical awards.
the fucking shithole awards that nobody gives a crap about. Like, let's just call it like it is, man. Let's just call it like it is.
Yeah. Okay, film editing. Two professional editors here. What do we think of Ford v Ferrari winning, AJ?
The best editing is invisible. Now that you're drawing my attention to the editing of the film, yep.
Yeah, it's certainly the film with the most editing, and I think that's why a lot of people are like, oh, you know, it's one of the ones that people complain about. And it's like, yeah, I mean, it's a well-edited film, like... Don't get me wrong.
What else was nominated?
The Irishman, Jojo Rabbit, Joker, and Parasite. Jojo Rabbit and Parasite, it's worth noting, won the big awards at the American Cinema Editors Awards. So a group of editors think that they're good. Although the Academy Award for Best Film Editing was also chosen by editors.
Man, I'm only just now realizing some pretty sore losers probably coming out of this. I've been so wrapped up in all the good news that I forgot to think about the films that deserved recognition that aren't going to get any.
Irishman didn't win anything.
Yeah.
But one that did win something is Little Women, which won Best Costume Design.
Nope.
Period film. Yeah, I mean, this is one of those, like, yeah, sure, why not?
Yeah, pretty classic.
Yeah. Makeup and hairstyling, Bombshell. This one, actually, yeah, this is a pretty well-deserved one, I think. The way Charlize Theron's transformation into Megyn Kelly It's fantastic. It still manages to like look exactly like her, but look kind of like Charlize, and or still look like a human being. And also John Lithgow's transformation to Roger Ailes is great. It's the same team that did the fat suit for Darkest Hour as well.
They're good. Yeah. They are good, aren't they?
Oh, they can transform a person. They'll do it.
They also, so they won for Darkest Hour and Bombshell after being nominated for Click and Norbit.
Oh my God.
Which, hey, the fat suits are great in them.
And a historical legacy to lead.
Right, in terms of more. Like, a lot of these aren't surprising, and a lot of the ones that are surprising are, like, the ones where you're like, this was... Like I feel like there aren't any, oh, pff, that didn't deserve it, that we weren't already expecting, you know? Cinematography went to Roger Deakins for 1917.
Which is fair enough.
Yeah.
Totally fair enough.
Yep. I love it. I love Roger Deakins. He should have more Oscars than he does, and it's like the seal broke. He got it for Blade Runner 2049, and now I bet he's gonna get at least one more Oscar in the time of his career. I think.
100%.
I think people are coming around to recognize.
People are finally coming around to Roger Deakins.
Well, no, it's that I said that wrong. It's more that how Quentin Tarantino or Steven Spielberg were the first like household name directors, yeah. Right? I think while I wouldn't go as far as calling Roger Deakins a household name DOP, he's the closest we've got at the moment.
It's true.
And people should be seeing that, I think, with him being awarded with stuff.
Yeah.
And also 1917 is not just a gimmicky one shot. It's a beautifully composed shots that happen to all stitch together in what looks like one take. I'm saying that here and now.
Sure, that's bold.
Yeah, that's a hot take.
Yeah, I'm it's hot take when it's literally the Oscar winner being like, hey, hot take, Roger Deakins deserved the best
hey,
cinematographer.
Hot take, Roger Deakins is a good cinematographer. production design went to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Now, this was what, like, I had an argument with, well, not an argument, but a discussion with Rowan while this was, we were watching this
live. A bare-knuckled fist fight.
that, like, because I agree, Parasite, this would have been a great win for Parasite, because the production design is fantastic, but it's like, it's just a nice house. And so the average person watches that and goes, oh yeah, they just found a nice house. But it's like, it's a character in the film, you know? Yeah. But then that's nothing against Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which transformed Hollywood Boulevard 50 years in the past. Like, it's incredible what they did. And I love the
and
story.
And you know, Hollywood's a character in that film as well.
Exactly. It's one of the words in the title.
It's almost like Hollywood is a character in the film itself.
It's funny as well. So Tarantino had a long-time partnership with the Weinstein Company for his films. And then for some reason, I haven't looked into it too much, but their relationship fell through for this film. and he decided not to work with Harvey Weinstein. But it was essentially like a bidding war for like Tarantino's next film. And so it was like this huge thing that everyone wanted. And it ended up going to Sony, but I think it was Universal, like, as part of their bid, like, transformed Hollywood Boulevard and, like, put out all these signs, like, Tarantino, look at this. Like, look at the kind of thing we can do. And they didn't end up going with them. It was, like, this massive fucking, like, stunt to try and get his attention. But
and who knows? You know, maybe if he had gone with them, he wouldn't have won the Oscar. Because he's the production designer. The film wouldn't have won the Oscar for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
The Oscar he's always wanted. Best production design.
You know Tarantino's a little bit butthurt right now. I mean, I'm sure everyone who didn't win is probably, but like, I bet there were enough signs to point towards this being his year that...
Oh, yeah, for sure. I still thought it was going to be... Even after all of Parasite's wins, I still thought that it was going to be like, oh, Once Upon a Time Hollywood won Best Picture. Sound editing...
But no, finally... We bullied the Oscars back into doing good films again. as is tradition, as is the ebb and flow of the Oscars year to year.
Sound editing and sound mixing. Editing went to 4V Ferrari, mixing went to 1917. Interesting. Yeah, I would have thought that this was 1917 would have won both of these, but yeah, sweet. 4V Ferrari won two Oscars.
4V Ferrari was mixing, did you say?
Editing.
Editing. Interesting. Interesting.
Aaron's like, God, I wouldn't have given it mixing. Yeah. But editing, for sure. No, it deserved it.
No, because Richard showed me a video the other week about, I think it was the mixing of the, it was like a specific video on Ford V Ferrari and the, I think it was the mixing that they were talking about, wasn't it?
I kind of went into both a little bit.
Yeah.
But it is super interesting. Yeah, if you just, I'm sure if you just look up sound editing or sound mixing of 4B Ferrari, it's like the two of the soundies on it. You're talking about going out and like filming like cars and making sure they got the right ones, and then how you have to create that symphony essentially.
Yeah, and even just like the placement of sound inside a cinema and stuff like that to create the effect of watching a car race.
Yeah.
It's just a gimmick. It's a gimmicky win. It's just the Doppler effect. That's all it's.
All right, okay. AJ with the hot take.
Wow,
Jesus.
Good Lord.
Yeah, no. Hot take. Another nuclear hot take. The one award, Academy. Stop splitting audio. I know audio people, or the audio division of Hollywood, are the cyclists of Hollywood. Like they get as mad, like cyclists get mad at cars. But look, I'll say it. I'm in, you know, vaguely in the industry. I know vaguely how most of filmmaking works, and I don't really know the difference between sound mixing and sound editing. I'm going to be editing this very podcast,
and I have no idea what the fuck I'm doing.
Yeah,
and the sound is always something people talk about.
And if I don't know what the difference is, then no one knows what the difference is. All right, there, I said it.
All right.
I see what we're all thinking.
Okay. So best original song went to Elton and Bernie for their song from Rocketman. It's interesting though, because they played all the nominees for this, like they all performed live. Man, I Can't Let You Throw Yourself Away from Toy Story 4 by Randy Newman sucks. It's so bad. Watching that song, I was like, Jesus Christ, this is awful.
Oh my gosh.
But then they also randomly, like, so they did this bit where it was like, Lin-Manuel Miranda came out and was like, you know, sometimes a song and a scene like become so synonymous together, and then they're like, here's some of those examples, and they were like, oh, you know, like played Eye of the Tiger with a montage from Rocky, and they played Breakfast Club, and then like the clip from Say Anything, and then it ended with just like Eminem's character from 8 Mile, and then Eminem just came out and performed Lose Yourself. And I was like, oh, okay. Like,
such a weird choice.
Yeah. You such know, how, you know, like, how movies have songs sometimes? Anyway, here's Eminem.
the idea that the Oscars, a organization that is so routinely putting their foot in their mouth and trying to be diversive and cool and continually failing, would like, Eminem's such a bad choice if you're wanting to appear progressive. Like, that dude has got so much shit in his like lyrical content that no one, like, you know, the zeitgeist hasn't really forgiven him for.
Are you calling for a cancellation of Eminem?
I don't think I need a call for it, dude. I think it's the ticket has been punched.
Interesting.
And also Eminem fucking sucks. I'll say it. I hate it. I hate Eminem.
Man, where did all this come from?
Good luck.
Have you, the Venom song? That was horrible. That's Eminem's place in public consciousness right now, is the terrible Venom song, and they bring him on to.
You can't judge him as late Eminem. Come on.
Yeah, AJ sucks at making content. The fucking.
Have you heard the Lethal Weapon episode? That's early AJ. You said don't judge him off late AJ.
Yeah, no, Eminem's great. Like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, this is a real weird take, man.
Yeah.
Oh, it is not. No, loads of people hate Eminem. Now, I'm not the only one, for sure.
I don't know. I haven't seen anyone else. I haven't seen popular society turn against him.
The woke brigade. No, Billy Eichner tweeted about him.
What did he say?
Just like today, I don't want to say because it has an offensive word in it that Billy Eichner can say that I cannot say, calling out Eminem.
Is it?
I'll find it and I'll just... Is it this word?
Is it this word? Is it though?
I will find it.
Okay. We'll just wait.
Yeah.
Not liking Eminem is a very popular opinion. I resent the fact that I'm being in any way trailblazing. Okay, he's 4 hours ago he tweeted, "Well, you can still sing the word, the F word, a million times and still perform at the Oscars. That's about diversity." Okay. So, and I look to Billy Eichner for all my moral ground.
for where to lead the woke brigade.
Yeah. This way, guys!
this way, guys. 1,000 tickets to Birds of Prey, please.
this will surely make a dent in the box office.
Yeah, but so also the story behind Eminem performing is that he, when his song won for When Lose Yourself won, the Academy was like, "Oh, do you want to come perform?" And he was like, "Yeah." And they're like, "You have to censor the song." And he was like, "No, fuck it, I'm not performing." And so that was them like writing the wrong and allowing him to perform it uncensored, but they like bleeped it in the telecast if you watch in the States. Although I don't think they bleeped it here. But yeah, so that was them kind of like extending an olive branch to allow him to say.
Why now?
Did they tell him they were going to bleep it?
I don't know. I think it's just like, hey, you have to perform, you know, like we want you to censor your own song, but whereas like
right,
for legal like, reasons they can do it. But he's like, I'm not tainting my art by performing it.
Yeah.
Not in my own kind of way.
I just don't understand why now. Why is this the year that that Eminem gets his right wronged by the Academy? When they've wronged
when
so many people.
Apparently no one
this
likes
year.
Him now.
and they pick the one white dude doing it.
Right,
like,
you think Greta Gerwig
borderline
should have come out and performed
a one woman version of Little Woman.
like, if they just get Greta Gerwig to come out and do, like, can you just give us some of the things you might have said on set when you were directing Little Woman?
And action.
Oi, you joke, but there was totally shit like that at the Oscars. The very little of it I saw at the start. They were like, we want to celebrate female directors and stuff. And it's like, what a weird
push-pull
to watch.
Yeah, yeah. Natalie Portman was wearing this like cape that on the kind of hem of it had like Wong, Gerwig, Diop, Halle, Skalma, like all these last names of women directors that were snubbed. So it was the directors for Hustlers, The Farewell, Little Women, Atlantix, Queen and Slim, Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, Portrait of a Lady on Fire, and Honey Boy. And so she had all these, like,
imagine being a female director who made a film last year and not being on Natalie Portman's cape. Fuck, you'd be like, I'm the lowest of the low. Like,
I've been snubbed from her cape.
Yeah.
Dub snubbed. The rear dub snub.
Yeah. Anyway, so Eminem still beloved.
Oh, no, everyone. You know what's a fucking horrible song as well? I'm not afraid. That song's so
right. Yeah, you're picking
again,
his worst
late,
songs.
Late Eminem, man.
What? Like, see, well, you don't like Stan. We wouldn't have the phrase, you know, "standing." You wouldn't be able to stan people so as hard as you do without the song "Stan."
You're right.
Which is a fucking work of art.
You're always saying now this looks like a job for me. You're always saying that, AJ.
Yeah,
that's true.
And he's got two new albums that he dropped just without fanfare, and both of them are pretty well received. Except for his new album's got some pretty dark stuff on it. But it's
Well, look, you guys have really challenged my unconscious biases towards white men. So thank.
Well, I don't know, you just came out so hot, being like, Eminem fucking sucks, and I was like, I wouldn't expect you to have an opinion on Eminem.
Maybe it's a Christchurch thing. Maybe it's a Christchurch thing. No one I know likes Eminem anymore.
Yeah.
Except you two.
Yeah, well, we moved to Auckland, didn't we?
Yeah, to be with our own kind.
Yeah. Okay, best original Eminem score went to Joker. Hilda, and I do not know how to pronounce the last name. Where's she from? Icelandic? Yeah, it's an Icelandic last name. But she composed the music for Chernobyl as well. Oh, and wow. So it's like, yeah, she. I saw that was like, she deserves an Academy Award for her work on Chernobyl, but sure, give it to her for the clown movie. but yeah, she's the third female composer to win the Best Original Score, and they did a thing where they get like the band leader to kind of just do like a little sample of each of the things, and for the first time ever, that was conducted by a woman.
Her name is pronounced Hildur Guðnadóttir. There you go.
Sweet.
it is not spelt Guðnadóttir. I've never looked at it until now. Yeah. It is not spelt that way, so that is confusing.
Yeah, well, it's got one of those letters that I guess is pronounced TH, but it does not look like that. Yeah. It's an O with a little thing on top of it. Anyway, yeah, this is like... Yeah, this pretty comfortably could have gone to any of them. I'm glad she won it, though, because she was the only female nominated. And I'm part of the woke brigade. Tears off my
this
my
way,
mask.
Guys! even with the most unwoke film of 2019, it's like we could still make it win for its one like vaguely woke.
I don't think it's the most
like
unwoke film of 2019.
What's this?
What is the most unwoke film of 2019?
Laquisha?
That's... Shit, man. You really came to the party with a gun, man. Like you really were prepared for that response.
Yeah, and also I was tossing up between that and Cuck. Laquisha, Aaron, if you haven't heard about it, is a film where a middle-aged white man gets fired from his radio job, and he says, fuck, you know what? Black people, especially black women, have it so easy. And so he starts a new radio show where he's... plays this character called Laquisha, and he's like, Laquisha's here to answer all your problems, honey. And he just plays this character throughout the whole film, and then he learns nothing about himself, presumably. I haven't seen the film. I really want someone to suggest it for our Patreon podcast.
Was this like a large budget film?
No, a very small budget. Yeah, it stars Leonardo DiCaprio.
he realizes that black women have it so easy, and so he says, I'm going to become the Joker.
All right, so animated short Hair Love, that was kind of one of those ones that seemed locked in. That played before Angry Birds 2, I found out in the Stones. Best live action short film went to a film called The Neighbor's Window, which, from what I understand, sounds better than the winner of that award last year.
Oh my god!
About the guy who tattooed with blackface. Documentary short subject was that learning to skateboard in a war zone if you're a girl. That one.
Oh really?
Yeah. And documentary feature went to American Factory, which was the first film made by Barack and Michelle Obama's production company.
The rich just get richer, huh?
Yeah.
Is there a production company called Obama-rama? And if it's not, why is it not called Obama-rama?
It's called Higher Ground Productions.
Well, there you go.
But yeah, it's a Netflix. They like they
it's
had
called
a
just a bunch of Obamas.
Nice. All right, international feature film. You ready for a big shock, Aaron?
Yes, please.
Parasite won.
Good lord.
Yeah.
Good.
Who would
Lord.
Have thought a South Korean film could take out an international feature film?
Wow.
It's never done it before.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. That's a big night for that film.
Yeah.
Well done to them.
Yeah.
They'll be happy with that.
Yeah, oh man. Bong Joon-ho, just watching him, like his award for Best Original Screenplay, and there's, because his co-writer is talking, and Bong's in the background holding his Oscar in front of him, and he just stares at it for ages, and then just starts giggling, and it's so cute. There's gifs of it you'll be able to find. But also, in possibly the only upset of the night that I'm truly upset about, Toy Story 4 won Best Animated Feature Film, which I normally would not be unhappy about, but man, did I want Klaus to win.
It's I'm funny, so isn't sorry. It? Because I like Toy Story. I think Toy Story 4 is a better film than Klaus, but I wanted Klaus to win just for the statement. So this is like, you know, it's a good Oscars when the biggest upset of the night is an award went to a film you really like, but you know, not one that you wanted to win.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel you.
And then, yeah, the adapted screenplay and original screenplay, as we've mentioned already, adapted screenplay went to Jojo Rabbit for Taika Waititi, and original screenplay went to Parasite, Bong Joon-ho, and Han Jin-won.
Do they read a translated version when they're reading the screenplay? of the...
It's interesting. I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Because they did... they, like, play a clip of the film with the screenplay, like, running over top of it as, like, an overlay.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it was, like, in Korean and in English.
Yeah.
or you just imagine, like, everyone... They're like, all right, here's the screenplay. And they go, it's in Korean, and they're like... Yeah, looks good.
the effort the Academy put into their voting process. Yeah. Yep, looks good. Another Toy Story. Yep.
But yeah, Jojo Rabbit winning for adapted screenplay.
There are some moments in your life where you understand what patriotism feels like.
Yeah, is this one of them?
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
It's a good change from when how unpatriotic I felt when AJ said that Eminem was shit, and I was like, I don't want to be from the same country as this person.
I don't want to be here anymore.
Yeah, no, I'm super stoked with it winning Best Adapted, and yeah, man, Taika, bro, he's
Taika bro.
I prefer Taika bro. I'm proud. I grew up being such a outcast from
such a loser.
typical New Zealand culture, I think, because like I didn't like sport and I didn't drink a lot as a teenager, so I always felt like I wasn't that patriotic. But Taika has like made me be like, yeah, I'm from New Zealand.
Yeah, we've got that, you know? One thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm still not in touch with my feelings. Don't worry, I'm still a Kiwi.
Unlike Taika.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Taika trying to make me cry with his film. I'm a fucking Kiwi male. You're not going to get tears out of this, boy.
Nice try, mate. Slip that by.
All right, so the four acting categories. Actor went to Joaquin for Joker. Actress went to Renee for Judy. Supporting actor went to Brad for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And supporting actress to Laura for Marriage Story.
Has anyone seen Judy?
No, I made a point of going to watch it last week, but now that I'm not watching a film every day, I'm struggling to find the, what's the word? Giving a shitness to do it.
Like, it just seems like such a, I'm sure she's great in it, but it's always such a bummer when an award as big as that goes to such a, underplay, you know what I mean? Like that no one's talking about. Like, it would have been awesome to see it go somewhere else.
Yeah, it's just like it's one of those ones where the trailer came out, everyone was like, oh, she's going to win the Oscar for this. And it's like, yeah, or it could be real shit. Yeah, and it's like, true. I think the movie still maybe was kind of shit, I don't know. But, I mean, she's, I guess, quite good enough. But again, like, she's playing a Hollywood actress who never won an Oscar, so this is like... somewhat awarding Judy Garland's legacy. You know?
And I think I'm all right with Brad Pitt winning for Once Upon a Time, though I don't think any of the nominated Best Supporting Actors... No, Joe Pesci, actually. He was probably the best.
Yeah, Brad Pitt's like a legacy one, I guess, that it's like he's never won for acting before. Yeah. And it's like watching clips of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood again, I'm like, he is real good in it. And it's one of those things where it's like, you think, oh, he's just playing Brad Pitt, he's just playing a laid-back cool guy. And it's like, he's actually like... embodies that character so completely, and it's like,
yeah,
just because you can't see him trying doesn't make it any better or worse.
Yeah, and I think there is an inclination, I think I talked about last week, that like, you know, if you don't see people like sweating or like crying or like being a gritty emotional thing, then like it's kind of dismissed as like not that good a performance, you know, whereas like, I don't know, if you can make a transcendently good performance that's just like you kind of having fun on screen, just in a way, cool, yeah, then it's like, this is pretty good, man. You do basically nothing, but he's still like knocking it out the park.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't think it came up last week, but just talking about the acting performances, you know, did you end up watching the second half of Marriage Story?
No, I did not.
Because, you know, this whole thing about the one scene that everyone shares everywhere and of them yelling at each other. And there's like this thing of people will see that on Twitter and go, they're just yelling and crying. That's not good acting. What do you think of that kind of?
I think that your real question should be, to what extent do you like believe the performance and like its nuance, as opposed to like, yeah, they're like yelling, crying, and that's like what an argument is. It doesn't necessarily make it good acting.
Yeah.
But like, you know, like I could yell at you right now, it doesn't make it good
and
acting.
And it would make me cry.
Yeah, exactly. Break your spirit.
And if I can add to that, Aaron, in defense of that Marriage Story scene, which I was blown away by that scene. Like, yes, yelling is the easiest form of acting, but you know, like, I've been to seen enough amateur performances and watched, you know, amateur actors yell and roll my eyes at. The fact that they can do a yelling, crying, sniveling scene like that and it take your breath away is like,
yeah,
that's fucking good acting then, because maybe in a vacuum that scene isn't impactful, but after watching that whole movie and being in each of those characters' corners and then seeing it get to a place that's just so sorrowful, explosive, and upsetting and explosive, like that scene affected me so much, and I got so angry when people were tearing it down as not being good acting, because it's like it's in a marriage with the story. I didn't even plan that at all. like it's the story that has led you to this point where this acting elevates the marriage story.
Exactly. Yeah. It doesn't exist in like a vacuum. I think a lot of people, like, when they see those scenes, they're like, it's not good acting, but you're 100% right. Like, a performance is built out of, you know, 2 hours of acting rather than like one scene, you know?
Yeah. And because I remember when Aaron and I, when we were at an acting course together, there was one girl that used to always cry in her performances. And I remember, and everyone was like, she's the best. Look at her. She can just cry on cue. And I remember me and you talking about, like, she's just crying.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, it's kind of different between like just crying and like, is this in like an authentic expression of what the script is asking you to do?
Yeah.
And do you feel like this is, I mean, yeah, do you feel like this is reality? And do you feel like these are two people who exist in the world who are talking to each other?
And I guess it's the same thing as the cinematography, that it's like there's good acting, there's bad acting, and there's acting that's appropriate for the for the scene. Exactly. And, you know, in Marriage Story, that they earn this explosion, which if you just saw, and I'm sure there's going to be fucking all over the world, there is going to be amateur, like, film class or acting classes that choose this scene, and it's going to be terrible, and they're not going to earn it, and they're just going to scream at each other.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
But yeah, it fully earns it, and you've got two like of the most of the best actors in the world,
and that's Joaquin Phoenix as the Joker.
Dialogues, yeah, AJ, do you think Joaquin deserved the Oscar?
It is my favorite thing about Joker, because it's Joaquin Phoenix, and it might be a problematic script or whatever you want to say about it, but it's like, yeah, but Joaquin Phoenix is one of the greatest actors alive today. Yeah,
and he actually is part of the woke brigade.
He was just deceived by the the unwoke brigade, and like, you know, he plays a performance that's good enough that people were concerned for what it might do to the world, and I liked his performance. You know what I mean? I can recognize it as good. There was never an issue with Joker. Like, no one was saying it was bad acting. It might be a bad script, but he delivers it very well. And I think that it is also cool that someone that the same character, you say it, I said it before and you told me I was dumb for saying
you just said you phrased it real poorly, but it's the second time that two different actors have won for playing the same character. The first time was Marlon Brando Robert and De Robert De Niro both won for playing Vito Corleone in The Godfather and its sequel. And so that was like supposed to be the same person at two different times in their life, whereas this is two completely different interpretations of the same character. So, because of course Heath Ledger won for the Dark Knight,
but which it was is a cool when Joaquin's, story, you know.
Yeah. And Joaquin's speech, he didn't thank anyone. He did his kind of like he's been doing on the campaign trail, you know, used his platform to talk about, you know, veganism and climate change and racism and all this stuff. And then he right at the end quoted his brother, River Phoenix, who died far too young. And yeah, it was an interesting speech. And then Renee Zellweger, like his speech went on for quite a while, and then Renee's went on for quite a while as well. And then that resulted in when Bong Joon-ho won, well, he'd already won Best Director for Parasite at this point. And so there you go, he won.
There you go.
But when Parasite won Best Picture, the final award of the night, a couple of the people did their speeches, and then they brought down the lights and they cut to Jane Fonda to you know, finish the night. And then clearly they had more to say, because they only spoke for 1 minute and 9 seconds. Before they brought the lights down on them. And then the whole crowd is like, up, up. And so you see like Tom Hanks and Charlize Theron in the front row being like, up, up, up. And then eventually they like cut away from Jane Fonda and brought the lights back up, and they got to finish their speeches. And there was like this cute little like older woman who was just like, it was so good to like, just like a real, like, because obviously
contributes very little to the rest of the conversation, but it's very wholesome to watch.
Yeah. Cause it's like, because English is her second language, she's speaking in such like simple terms, like one syllable words. And it's just very like wholesome.
Very
like
sweet.
This is, yeah. And so that was great. And that was, I mean, when Bong won, Best Director, I clapped. I was like, I was so stoked. Then it won Best Picture, and I was like, fucking
tonight's the night.
Yeah, because his speeches were so great as well. Yeah. Like after winning international film, he was like, I can't wait to drink tonight. And then he said, like, you know, I started when in film school, I studied Martin Scorsese, and then he like got Martin to stand up and got everyone to give a standing ovation to Martin Scorsese. And then and he said that like when he was starting out, that like Tarantino would always put his films in like his top 10 of the year and stuff like that, which gave him so much exposure and all this stuff. And then Tarantino like very begrudgingly is like, no thank you. And so
yeah,
because Tarantino has one of the worst poker faces at hiding how angry he is that he didn't win.
Do you think that them trying to ask to put the lights back up for the end of the speech, that's such a microcosm for what's wrong with the Oscars, right? Like, the Oscar. I was thinking about this because after the Independent Spirit Awards the other night, which I think I'm going to invest more in them next year than the Oscars, because I don't know, I just like what they stand for better, I guess. But like, the Oscars is a great idea. This is what I was thinking about. The Oscars is a great idea to put a respected, you know, line in the sand, a recognition of the best of the year in any particular art form, but film specifically, is a really good idea. But the Academy is so rotten, man. And it's like, it's just so frustrating to watch year after year. And, you know, this was a good Oscars, and I feel bad to bring up any kind of ill will, because it did kind of, as I said before, it feels like we bullied them into doing something good again this year. But like, how many times is it going to switch back and forth? And how many times are we going to, like, this past week when a Oscar voter and someone from the Academy came out and, like, revealed their, like, brutally honest Academy vote?
Brutally honest Oscar ballots.
Yeah.
The Hollywood Reporter did, like, a male and a female who both are Academy voters, and got them to reveal what they voted for. And it's like, I don't think foreign films should be nominated with real movies. I want an American, like, Sam Mendes did great for 1917, but I want an American director to win. And like all these things, it's just like, you have to remember that the Academy is 8,500 people that just want their mate to win or have their own weird biases.
Exactly. And it's so horrible to see how empty-headed these people seem. Because I remember when something else happened that was, It was before that, like just after the nominations came out, another Oscar voter's like opinions were made public, and it was about why Adam Sandler and J-Lo weren't nominated, among others, and it was like it was like racist, like it was racism bubbling. Just, I mean, I know Adam Sandler's white, but in J-Lo's case specifically, it was using terms, Aaron, like not the type of actress who wins Oscars. You know what I mean? And it's like, what is it? What is it about this actress that makes them not the kind of actress that wins Oscars, you know? And it's it was so gross. And just the way it talked about Adam Sandler as being like, you know, if he makes another couple of films like Uncut Gems, then he'll be nominated. And it's like, what are you talking about? This is what the Oscars should be about, is celebrating this kind of like surprising and challenging shit that comes out, you know? Like, it just seems so anti to what the Oscars, I think, should be about when I read those statements. And I was like, this is the problem is that the Oscars is opinion maths, right? So it's not, and we've talked about this before, and I know you guys probably know this, but they don't all sit around in a room and decide what gets what. They don't all sit around in a room and vote. These are the eight films that should get nominated, and this is the one that should win. It's everyone judges a film, and the maths are done to tally what the best film what the highest voted on film. And in a year where Parasite won a bunch of shit, I feel very sheepish saying this, but when your opinion maths more often than not result in films like Green Book winning, the problem is not that it needs to go to a judged by a panel kind of thing. The problem is that the people in the Academy have biases and have opinions and have antiquated views. And I mean, I don't know how. You know, I'm too cynical to believe that there wasn't any tampering done to make Parasite win the year, and I think that they should just redo kick everyone out of the Academy and then put different people in it. I don't know. I think that's a very logical thing to do, especially as we progress as society, to get new voices and new opinions judging these things.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing that they always do. It was the year after the year of Oscars So White, when that hashtag became a thing. Yeah. That was when they were like, we're going to actually, like, next year bump up the diversity. But who knows if they ever actually did that.
But it's probably not just not bumping up the diversity. You also have to take it out the other end as well, because otherwise that's always going to be a minority unless they literally double the amount of people in there, right? Like, just kick people out of the Academy. Who gives a shit? I don't care.
Well, there probably should be, like, a statute of limitations that, like, I mean, maybe there is, but it's like, you know, you can vote on Oscars for up to 10 years after you work on a movie or something.
That's such
know?
A good idea, man. Yep.
Your Academy membership has to be renewed every time you work on a movie, kind of thing. Like, it renews every time you work on something. But, yeah.
I think the kind of problems that you highlight with the Oscars is a kind of distinctly American problem. Well, maybe not distinctly American problem, but it seems like somewhat kind of reflective of their own political system. Like, even if you look at the nomination of Hillary Clinton in the the Democratic seat last time, that was just basically a result of, you know, a small segment of the Democratic Party like tipping the scales, you know. Which is kind of, you know, and you see now, you know, the kind of like grassroots movement in the Democratic Party of people like being like, no, this is fucking bullshit. Let's organize ourselves and, you know, like create a kind of a wave of change by, you know, inspiring young progressive ideology and getting the shit done. And then, you know, you have a whole lot of young senators come through, or not senators, House of Representatives members come through in 2018. It's like, you know, people react against this shit, and also, like, you know, popular opinion can change very swiftly. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I think that's probably the one hope that you can have for the Oscars is that, like, you know, people will start being like, oh, like, quite quickly be like, oh, wait, maybe we shouldn't just, like, vote for all of our white friends because, like, you know, that's not how we live anymore, y'all.
And yeah. I'm glad you brought that up, Aaron, because moments before I found out Parasite won Best Picture, I found out after 3 days of caucusing that Pete Buttigieg officially won Iowa. And by officially, I mean he fucking cheated. And if you don't think he cheated, you probably also think Jeffrey Epstein killed himself. All right.
I have not been following the Iowa caucus thing at all. I keep seeing references to it.
Dude, there is footage. There is footage of people flubbing it so that Buttigieg wins. It's insane. It's basically the media hates Bernie Sanders and he actually did real well and was going to win. And so they buried it until people got confused. And the app that counted the votes was like funded by Buttigieg. And the way a split caucus decides who they're going to vote for is they flip a coin, which feels very rudimentary. But you see a guy flipping a coin for one of the caucuses. It's on Twitter. He flips a coin and there's no point doing this visually because this is an audio medium, but let's just say a coin toss is a very hard thing to fake because it's very obvious and there's all these eyes on this guy flipping a coin, catching it in his hand, looking at it and then moving his fingers around, like, you know, potentially flipping it upside down, and then he looks at it and then flips it again with this. It's so obvious and it's such a anyway.
The way to cheat a coin toss is you flick it up, catch it in your hand. If it's the result you want, you go, it's there. If not, you slap it on the other hand and go, yeah. Oh, it's the opposite.
Yeah.
Cheating 101.
Listen up, Iowa.
Oh, that's interesting. So overall, this is a pretty good year for the Oscars. Like,
yeah,
the results.
Yeah, but
anyway.
It is. And the benefits will be for the films that that, you know, come in the wake of ones like Parasite winning, could be really good for Hollywood. Well, not even Hollywood, for the industry. But I one good year does not make me want to trust them completely anymore. Especially after all the shit.
I mean, but
out.
Just fucking, you know, just have a good time. Just enjoy it.
Yeah, with the independent
Parasite won.
Yeah, you're right. That is good. And let's focus on the good.
If you get the group of nominees you're given, this is some of the best possible results.
100%.
Yeah. Agreed. I mean, yeah, sure, you can talk about the who got snubbed and everything like that, but you know, this is we've got what we got. You can't be like, oh, and actually, we found another nomination. Greta Gerwig wins Best Director. With what we're given, we got, like, you know, some of the best results. And even, like, you know, aside from the snubs, like Parasite winning Best Picture, Best Director is, like, phenomenal, 100% deserved.
And winning Best Screenplay is even...
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't expecting that at all, you know?
Yeah. I wonder how many... you keep talking. I was going to see how many...
Shall I wrap up the show, make this a clean sub 1 hour thing so I can edit it and chuck it out?
Yeah,
as fast as possible. Well, thank you everybody for listening to the Cold Pop Show Oscar season. We've got one more Oscar season episode coming at you in a fortnight where we're going to be talking about what would win the Oscars of the entire decade. And next week, we're returning to Film Franchise Fortnights with everybody's favorite secret agent who, when you watch earlier films, they're not very good, and it's pretty disturbing. 007. We're starting James Bond. We're finally doing 007 as our 100th franchise, arguably.
Depending on how you count it.
Exactly. So that's us next week. If you liked this episode, then please consider supporting Cold Pop Show all the places by liking and subscribing and following and commenting and liking, but where you like this specific podcast and not just the page or whatever, do all that. And you can find us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter at Cold Pop Show. You can email us at coldpopshowmedia@gmail.com. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, and you can also find us on Acast. Join our Discord, which the link to will be in the show notes. And our Patreon, but whatever. Anyway, did you find out that thing you were looking for?
I don't know.
So, you did find it out, or you don't know?
I don't know.
This was a pleasure talking to you guys. I enjoyed this. This was good. It's good to debrief in such a way, I think.
Yeah. And not debrief by taking off our briefs. That'll be later on.
Richard. Hey, thanks, Aaron, for joining us again.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. It's always a pleasure to talk Oscars with you guys.
Uh-oh. Yeah. And we will see everybody next week. And be sure to stay for the post-credit scene after the music plays at the end of this episode. Goodbye.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Hello, thanks for sticking around. Here we are. Listen, post-credit scene. A la Marvel and DC, to a lesser extent.
It wasn't started by them, though. There were post-credit scenes in movies before them. And there were post-credit scenes in movies after them.
Can I just say, what a good episode of the Cult Publisher podcast that was.
Yep, I agree. Wholeheartedly.
What was your favorite part?
When we talked about the Oscars, because I know for a fact that, that's the episode.
Yeah. I thought some of your language was a bit problematic, but on the whole, I think we learned a lot, and I think there's a lot there that you'll be able to learn from moving forward, which is the most important thing. So what are we here to talk about today?
Well, this is our Patreon exclusive segment for $5 and up tier, where people who are part of that tier or are above can send us a question or a challenge or a discussion topic for us to have a small little bants about in this here, the post-credit sequence, Richard. And this episode, the post-credit sequence, is brought to us by Craig Major. And he has a bit of a long question, but it's an interesting one. He says, is there anything you've seen in a film, TV episode, web video, etc., that your brain just absolutely failed to comprehend, to the point that you aren't entirely sure that you actually saw it? He says, an example of mine is in Bruno, where he makes the avant-garde show featuring the guy with the swinging dong, and the man's urethra speaks the name Bruno as if it were a mouth. Another one is a web video of a girl singing a Taylor Swift song, then she pulls her underwear down and her vagina sings the rest of the chorus. I saw this on Facebook about 10 years ago, WTF. I guess for me, talking or singing genitals is just too much for my brain. So, Richard, have you ever seen anything in media, whatever that media may be, that you just failed to comprehend?
The Bruno penis, which is like one of the only things I remember about that movie, and is such a great answer to that question. This question frustrated me so much because why?
Is it because you know you have an answer for it, but you couldn't remember the example?
Yeah, I've been racking my brain for like 6 weeks almost, trying to think of an answer to this, and I just cannot. I can't think of a single answer, but I know there must be something.
It's that weird like moment where you question whether or not you're dreaming because you just saw something so absurd and
it's a bra moment.
Yeah, it's a total bra moment. but I do have an answer, Richard. I have an answer.
Good. I'm glad you do because,
it's from a web video, which I feel is probably the dominant form of which these kinds of moments happen, I reckon, would be non-narrative media that you see on the internet. And my answer is from a sort of alternate reality game. Oh, it wasn't really a game, though. It's from a YouTube channel called Alan Tutorial. Have you heard of Alan Tutorial?
No.
So you're familiar with YouTube tutorials and how,
I'm familiar with YouTube,
a million of them for anything you want to do. Alan Tutorial was like a satirical tutorial series where a very softly spoken guy records from his handycam and teaches you to do, things that you don't need to know how to do, essentially. Like, I remember one of them is how to crush cans with two slacks of wood. And stuff like that, like real obscure things. And he talks like this, and he's like, oh, welcome to, this is my tutorial, this is Alan Tutorial, and this is what the... And it goes on and on and on, and like most of the show is just like obscure tutorials that you'd never need to know, but as it goes on, and it was actually an art piece by a guy who now works for Adult Swim and has done such viral Adult Swim kind of dark mysteries as this house has people in it and unedited footage of a bear, I believe it's by him. And in this series, it basically gets really, really dark as it goes on, and while he doesn't say anything, you get the increased kind of feeling like someone's chasing him, like he's boarding himself in rooms and sort of just muttering to himself with each episode. You know, he'll be in like this super crowded, messy room going, tutorial, tutorial. And the episode titles just become gibberish. And the final three episodes are all set within this, like, it looks like he's in a trash compactor. Like, there's garbage everywhere. You can't really see what's going on. You don't really... He's, like, barefoot. Everything's wet and dirty. And it's very scary. And he sort of spends these last episodes looking around this empty space, for desperate for something to give you a tutorial on. There is a moment in, I think it's either the second to last or maybe the third to last episode, where he's in this trash compactor looking thing, where the camera moves past something. And because it's dark and because it's not the highest quality footage, you see a very upsetting moving thing. And it's not really clear what it is. And it stays on. It maybe cuts back to it maybe two or three times. But he's not focusing on it. He doesn't want you to see what it is. But because it's an art project, you know this, the intention is for you to be able to see whatever this thing is. And the best way I can describe it is it kind of looks like, you know, when you go to a kebab shop and they got those big hunks of meat like spinning on a
doner kebab, yeah.
Yeah, it looks like one of those on the ground, like spinning around. And a lot of people say it's a dog. It's like a little fluffy dog. And just the way it's turning makes it look like it's some other like weird gyrating meat monster. But I feel like this is the definitive answer to this question for me. I apologize it took so long to get there. But it's this creepy little meat monster on the floor in the middle of this video that isn't focused on at all. And that's my answer.
Nice, that's a good one. The only sort of closest thing I have to an answer, I guess, is my friend and I used to go and get like 10 zombie movies out from the, I think I've spoken about this before. You know, you get like 10 rentals for $10 and we'd go get a weekend. And there's some of those that are like, surely. There was one, it was an Australian movie called Undead, and I think it was just called Undead. And the poster has like someone with like three shotguns attached to be one shotgun, and the movie ends with like people floating up into space, and I just have a real vague memory of that and being like, this movie's real fucking weird.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.